ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 52, Text 41 was written on the board when I came in the morning, and now it's gone. If it had just been left there, it would have been better. So Text 41 to 44. I'll just read Text 41 to 43, and then we can go through 44 together. I have to dry my eyes. I can see more clearly. Shro bhavani tvam ajito dahane vidarbhan gupta sametya pritano patibhi paritaha nirmatya choja magadhindra balang prasahya Mang rakshasena vidhino dvaha viryashulkam. Rukmini speaking, via a message to Krishna. O unconquerable one, tomorrow when my marriage ceremony is about to begin, you should arrive unseen in Vidarbha and surround yourself with the leaders of your army. Then crush the forces of Chaija and Magadhindra, which means Shishupal and Jarasandha, and marry me in the Rakshasa style, winning me with your valor. See, even before she's married, she's giving orders to her husband. As Srila Prabhupada points out in Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Rukmini, being born of royal blood, certainly had a brilliant grasp of political affairs. She advised Sri Krishna, it's only advice. It's not an order. To enter the city alone and unnoticed and then surround himself with his military commanders so he could do what was needed. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti compares the coming fight to the Lord's churning of the ocean to extract the goddess Lakshmi. Gorgeous, gorgeous Rukmini, the goddess of fortune, would be gained in the coming turbulence. Text 42. Antapurantara charim anihatya bandhun tvam udvahe katham iti pravadam yupayam purve durasti mahati kuladeva yatra yas yang bahyanavavadhur girijam upeyat. Since I will be staying within the inner chambers of the palace, you may wonder, how can I carry you away without killing some of your relatives? But I shall tell you a way. On the day before the marriage, there is a grand procession to honor the royal family's deity, and in this procession, the new bride goes outside the city to visit Goddess Girija. Purport. Clever Rukmini anticipated a possible objection on the part of Sri Krishna. He certainly would not object to subduing rascals like Shishupal and Jarasandha, but he might be reluctant to injure or kill Rukmini's relatives, some of whom might block his way to the palace's inner sanctum, where the women were protected. The procession to or from the temple of Girija, Durga, would provide the perfect opportunity for Krishna to kidnap Rukmini without harming her relatives. Text 43. Yasyang ripankaja rajasvapanam mahanto vanchantyumapati rivatmatamo pahatyai yahyambu jakshonalabheya bhavat prasadam jahyamasun vrata krishan satajan vibhisyat. O lotus-eyed one, great souls like Lord Shiva hanker to bathe in the dust of your lotus feet and thereby destroy their ignorance. If I cannot obtain your mercy, I shall simply give up my vital force, which will have become weak from the severe penances I will perform, Then, after hundreds of lifetimes of endeavor, I may obtain your mercy. Please pass this back. Text, oh no, then the purport. Purport, the divine Rukmini's extraordinary dedication to Sri Krishna is possible only on the spiritual platform, not in the fragile world of mundane affection. So verse 44, we can chant this together. Brahmana uvacha, ityete guhya sandesha, yadu deva maya hrita, vimrishya kartam yachchatra, priyatam tadanantaram. Translation. The Brahmana said, this is the confidential message I have brought with me, O Lord of the Yadus. Please consider what must be done in these circumstances and do it at once. Purport. When the Brahmana arrived, he broke the seal of a confidential letter written in the privacy of Rukmini's quarters and meant only for Lord Krishna. By using the term Guhya Sandeshaha, the trustworthy Brahmana, personally selected by Rukmini, here affirms that he has not violated the confidentiality of this message. Only Lord Krishna has heard it. Since the marriage of Rukmini was fast approaching, Sri Krishna would have to act immediately. The term Yadu Deva indicates that Lord Krishna, as the lord of the powerful Yadu dynasty, should make his decision and then mobilize his followers if necessary. Thus end the purports of the humble servants of his divine grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada to the 10th canto, 52nd chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Rukmini's Message to Lord Krishna. Now the Brahmana adds his little message at the end, reinforcing what Rukmini is saying. He's a good messenger. He's not just carrying the message, but he's politely pushing it also. This is Rukmini Leela, a famous story of how Krishna kidnapped Rukmini, Rukmini Haran. Famous means at least traditionally among Hindus it's well known. Now, it's not the usual topic of the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Gauriya Vaishnavas, who, when considering Krishna's pastimes, traditionally they will concentrate upon his Vrindavan pastimes. And in fact, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur has mentioned that consideration of the Dwarka pastimes is that will block our entrance into or appreciation for the aspiring to the position of serving Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan. Now, this doesn't mean that Rukmini is, well, in one sense, yes, it's one sense less, these pastimes are less, but better to take it from the other perspective and say that Radha Leela, that is more, because Rukmini, after all, is the eternal consort of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it's not that her love for Krishna is trifling. If we were to take all the love in this mundane world that's ever been experienced throughout the course of time and put it all together, it still wouldn't make up one moment of the love that Rukmini feels for Krishna, which more glorifies the love of Radha. Now we're talking from our perspective theoretically, but It's not that Rukmini's love is condemned, rather that her love is so great, but still we have to praise the love of Radha more, then it just goes to show how great is that very confidential subject of Radha's love for Krishna. So really, love is what it's all about. The ultimate truth is love, but not the love of this world. And therefore, to understand that, or to begin to enter that, first of all, we have to understand the philosophical truths, tattva. We find that all the acharyas, they commenting on Bhagavatam, the Gaudiya acharyas also, they don't just, well, the principal acharyas, they give so many philosophical explanations also, which we find interspersed throughout this 10th canto. Otherwise, if we just hear the story that there was this princess who was very beautiful and all the kings, they lusted after her, and Shishupal was ready to marry her, but then she didn't want to marry Shishupal, and she heard about Krishna, and she sent a message, and Krishna came and kidnapped her, and fought off the opposing kings without understanding the context that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God. It doesn't sound like a love story. It is a love story, but a love story of this world. So, first of all, we have to understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So even when we're discussing Leela, as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, discussing his commentary on Chaitanya Bhagavat, he said, even though this book is full of the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, but following my own tendency, I've given explanations in a very philosophical way. So Rukmini herself, and that's a major difference between her and Radha, although they're not different also, in another sense, is that Rukmini, she knows that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Radha does sometimes, not much. Or even if the residents of Vrindavan, they know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it doesn't really mean much to them. It doesn't make any difference to their appreciation of him, because their love for him is not based on knowing his glories. But for us, Krishna, he recommends that in Bhagavad Gita, Aham sarvasya prabhavo matah sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvitaha. Knowing my glories as the Supreme Lord, the generator of everything, that everything comes from me, those devotees, they knowing this, iti matva, understanding this, they worship me with their intelligence and their feelings. Can you sit? Yeah, that's better. Sit like this. So Rukmini also, she knows that Krishna is what in English language is called God. It's a much misused and misunderstood word. Srila Prabhupada used the term Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he defined that in all his books. What is the meaning of that? So God, G-O-D, generator, operator, destroyer. That Srishti, Stiti, Pralay. That word wasn't made based on that, but it can be analyzed like that. So Rukmini knew that Krishna is the supreme controller and he can do it. He can kidnap her. She was actually putting her family members at great risk. Although she gave a means to minimize that risk, that kidnap me when I come out of the temple. Don't storm the inner quarters, but when I come out of the house, then when I go for darshan of Girija, Durga, she who is born from a hill, literally, Girija, then you kidnap me. So there's less risk of, but definitely killing is on the agenda. It's highly possible. Fighting is definitely going to be there. Because the kings aren't just going to watch Krishna walk away. Srila Prabhupada explained in one lecture that we see culturally, it's the present manifestation of whatever's left of Vedic culture. So in the Hindu marriage ceremony, the bridegroom, he puts the red powder in the parting, and the wife is supposed to wear that from then on. So Srila Prabhupada explained that this originates from the Kshatriyas kidnapping and fighting and then taking the blood of the opponent and putting it on the newly won bride's head. Marriage by blood. So Rukmini, she knew that would happen, and she was raised as a Kshatriyani Kumari, the daughter of a Kshatriya. So she knows the political art of how to effect the kidnapping. She also knew how to drive a chariot, because she drove the chariot when Krishna was busy fighting. So she was a well-qualified wife for Krishna, who had taken the position of Yadu Deva. No more on here, not known as Vrajanas. Rukmini would not want to hear that name even, the Lord of Vrindavan, but the Lord of the Yadus. So Rukmini was coming out of the family of that marriage means you leave one, the girl leaves one family and joins another family. So now she was going to join the families or the Yadu family, which would expand greatly as Krishna was to marry more and more queens. Rukmini probably wasn't thinking of having 16,107 co-wives. Krishna was an eligible bachelor at that stage. Of course, for Kshatriyas especially, it's quite possible or quite normal to have more than one wife. Even there was, again, Srila Prabhupada said that in Lucknow, which was the center of Muslim culture, Lucknow and Delhi, one Nawab there, he had several thousand wives. But Srila Prabhupada, he showed the difference also, that one or two wives, they're happy and the rest are lamenting because they don't see their husband. They can't be intimately mix with him. But Krishna, he intimately mixed with every single wife. And everyone thought, I have captured Krishna because he's only with me. And that was true. They'd all captured Krishna. But he wasn't only with all of them. So Krishna, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That was a very attractive feature for Rukmini. Naturally, every woman, unless they're raised in the modern age, they want a husband who can protect them, and who can protect better than Krishna? Rakhe Krishna Mareke, Mareke Krishna Rakhe. As Rukmini said later, many years later, to Krishna, that any woman who accepts anyone else as a husband, they're more or less just cheated anyway, because what is this bag of bones, pus, blood, liver, kidney, various organs within it? It's all within one bag, decorated with some hairs and mustaches. And what's that? That's not a husband. Krishna's the only real husband. Similarly, round the other way also, if someone thinks this is my wife, then they're committing adultery. Because everyone is to be enjoyed by Krishna. Anyway, socially, conventionally, there are husbands and wives. But Rukmini understood that there's no possible better husband. Generally, Lord Shiva is worshipped as the ideal husband. He's the quiet, gentle type, but when he gets angry, he gets really angry when he has to protect his wife. Of course, it's not every woman who would want to live under a tree, but his devotees, they generally do well in this world, even though he's not interested in having a house. That also, Srila Prabhupada told the story that when he got married, he had a beautiful house and everything, but all the rishis came and he had to give them all the dakshina. So he gave everything, including his house, and then he was left under a tree again. So he likes that. He's a renunciant, Lord Shiva. Even though he has the material energy personified as his wife, and not just a Maya Devi, but the Maya Devi. Maya Devi number one. But he's not influenced to enjoy her. So Krishna is the best husband possible within this material world. Lord Shiva is a very powerful, faithful, realized husband. And in spiritual existence, in real existence, Krishna, he is quite an unpredictable character, but that makes him all the more lovable. And he likes that also. He tried to elicit such emotions in Rukmini. She was quite predictable, it seems, but her love for Krishna was just completely unfailing. And it's unfailing in the sense that it just flows toward Krishna. There's no obstacle, there's nothing which will make her angry or express any displeasure with Krishna. So Krishna is the supreme controller. This is the point that we all have to understand, that Rukmini, she understands completely and perfectly. She also knows him as her husband, that means a very intimate personal relationship. But first, we have to understand Krishna is the supreme controller. That is the beginning of God realization. To accept that there is a supreme controller, which is not, it shouldn't be such a difficult thing to understand. If we understand that we are controlled, we don't want to die, we don't want to grow old, but we are forced by the laws of nature. Laws means there's a lawmaker. That lawmaker is God. Of course, there in the modern, particularly at the present time, there's been a resurgence of atheism and arguing that these laws, just there are natural laws, but there is no lawmaker. But for all they may present it as being very scientific, it doesn't resonate with common sense, basic common sense. I often say that in public lectures when I'm presenting this point, that I usually show my steel glass here. I usually use this as a sample. That if we say this came into being by just some random interaction of chemicals, you say, no, that's not possible. You say, well, the whole universe, which is far much more complex, how can you say that comes into being by random interaction of chemicals? So the opponents may say, well, you don't know science. And I say to them, you don't know common sense. It's, you can say it just comes into being. You have all these fine-tuned constants by which the universe exists in a way in which we on this planet experience that we are alive and other living beings are alive. But it appeals to the intelligence much more, that there's a lawmaker behind it all. So that's the first point. Two points that I isolate that Srila Prabhupada preached on mostly throughout the world, establishing Krishna consciousness. We are not the body. We are eternal, spiritual, living beings. That's one point. And actually this point, there's this whole atheism versus theism argument going on, but it's going on between theists, between Christians and Muslims on two sections of one side, and atheists on the other. But the understanding of reincarnation undermines both of them. Reincarnation, and then that doesn't fit within your evolutionary theory, or that everything simply comes into being out of nowhere. We don't believe in miracles, but everything is explainable by science, except how the universe came into being. Everything else, just one small thing. That there was nothing, and then there was a nothing exploded, and here we all are today. Well, it's called a singularity, which is one way of saying that they don't know, or they could call it a miracle. So that there is a lawmaker, a governor, an operator, a destroyer, that it's a much better hypothesis. So that's what. We are not the body. So a lot of the atheistic arguments are against the very inadequate theology of Christianity and Islam. And they say things like, well, if the Bible is supposed to know everything, why is there no mention of electricity or DNA or all these things? But actually in the Vedic knowledge, what we know that there was highly advanced knowledge, for instance, of astronomy, anatomy, and so on. Exactly, DNA may or may not have been there. We don't know. A lot of the knowledge has been destroyed in the course of time. Literally destroyed, not just lost, but destroyed. So anyway, that we are eternal spiritual living beings. We are not matter. Life is not a product of matter. This point should be pushed. I mean, there is so much, even we could say, objectively observed evidence of reincarnation. It's the kind of thing that scientists don't like to look at. They prefer to ignore it. But there is plenty of good evidence that even according to mundane academic standards, that reincarnation is a fact. So matter is not all in all. Actually, there's so many points on this. So these two points. We're eternal living beings. We go from body to body to body. And there is a supreme controller. And we want happiness. We want to be happy. So that happiness is linked with the supreme controller. He is Rasovai Saha. He is Rasa. He is the mellows of bliss, love. Love is what it's all about. Ultimately, all the philosophy, all our searching, everything we aspire for, it comes to this point, as George Harrison writes in the Introduction to Krishna book. Everyone is looking for Krishna. Some people realize it and some don't. So Krishna is the supreme controller. This is the first point to understand. Love, yes. But first of all, understand that he's the supreme controller, because our conception of love is mixed up in our present stage, in the conditioned stage. Our conception of love is mixed up with the misconception of ourselves being the enjoyers of this world. So our idea of love is mixed up with the idea of exploitation. And then we come to mundane sex, that in enjoying, exploiting. And that has expanded in exploiting the earth and trying to control everything. Ishvaro hamaham bhogi. I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. So first of all, to understand that we're not the controller, we are controlled, and there is a specific supreme controller. So this point is to be understood. Love is ultimate. If we say this, many people will appreciate that. But even people who don't have any idea of Krishna consciousness, but then we have to explain to them what that love means. The love is not the love that you have for your wife or your children or your dog or your country or some kind of nebulous love for everything, but love is specifically for Krishna. He is the object, ultimate object of love for everyone, and that love means Atendra Priti Vancha Tare Bale Kam Krishnendra Priti Ichadhare Premanam. Love means there's no consciousness of personal sense gratification at any level. It's simply to act, think, speak, live for the transcendental pleasure of Krishna. So that's the meaning of love. It's, if we say love, people like it, but then their conception of love is intertwined with their rejection or ignorance of Krishna. Ignorance of Krishna. So, first we should see, Krishna is the Supreme Controller. Not a blade of grass moves without His sanction. From the cosmic level to the dance of the planets, galaxies and the stars, and down to the atomic and subatomic level, which is very similar in many ways, everything is controlled by Krishna. Krishna knows everything. He supervises everything. Still, He gives us some independence with which to work, some limited independence. That Krishna controls everything is not an excuse for us to neglect anything. But Krishna is the ultimate controller. Therefore, man proposes, God disposes. We can try, but the result is ultimately with Krishna. So, our beginning understanding of God is that He is the controller, I am the control. Then we come to the platform, He is the master, I am the servant. There is a subtle difference in that. It becomes more personal. Then we can gradually come to the point of He is the predominating enjoyer. And this is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's language. He is the predominating moiety. And Radha is the predominated. The moiety is of the absolute truth. Moiety means half. So their pastimes are pastimes of pure love, in which satisfaction of Krishna's transcendental senses is the means of sharing love, but of expressing love. And Krishna accepts love by accepting the offerings of His devotees. But the beginning of our God consciousness, to understand, He is the controller, we are controlled. Why does He control in such a way? That's a big problem for Christian theologians. Why does He control in such a way that there's so much suffering in the world? The problem of evil, the problem of suffering. But that is all resolved by the understanding that Purusha Sukha Dukkhanam Bhuktritve Hetu Ruchyate. Man makes his own destiny by his own actions. We are the cause ourselves of our suffering and apparent enjoyment in this world. Krishna is overseeing all of that, Upadrashtanu Mantacha. He's overseeing all of that, but we have a little independence to create our own suffering and enjoyment. So, the beginning of God consciousness is to recognize that there is a controller. And if we get in line with His plan, then everything goes much better for us, instead of trying to resist it. Krishna has desires what He wants us to do. And if we do that, if we do what He wants us to do, instead of pursuing our own agenda, then we actually serve our real self-interest. It seems that we can best serve our self-interest by being selfish. But that's not a fact, because constitutionally we are not independent beings. Constitutionally, we are controlled by Krishna. So our best self-interest is served by recognizing Krishna's superiority and agreeing to act as he desires. Just like an animal is the pet dog understands this principle, that my self-interest is served by serving the master's interest. If I do what he wants me to do and he tells me to sit, I sit, then the master will be affectionate to me and will serve me, actually. So we can find some lessons of God consciousness, even in the dog, which is probably why people, at least in this part of the world, like dogs so much, because it gives them a sense of being God. There's a living being who's dependent on them, who's affectionate to them, who they maintain. So one takes the godly position in relationship to a dog. However, we would be better to ourselves take the position of a dog in relationship to Krishna. Our real self-interest would be served by doing that. Instead of making our own plans, we have so many plans. I will do this, I will do that. Kartaham iti manyate. We think, I am the doer. But we should know that Krishna, he is controlling. He has his plans. We can have some semblance of being a controller to some extent. We can be the controller of a dog if we have some extraordinarily good karma. We can be the controller of a whole country. We can become the Prime Minister of Britain, at least controller, at least political head. But that's the way the samsara chakra, the wheel of fate, works. That someone, due to some good karma, they become the political head of the country. But simply by having that post, they incur so much sinful reaction that in their next life they have to become a dog or worse. So that's how it works. You get up to the top and then you must fall down again, without, due to not having proper knowledge. So, understanding Krishna's plan. How will we understand Krishna's plan? It's quite complex. We can understand that, almost intuitively, we can understand that there is a supreme controller, a supreme lawmaker. How that control works, it's not so easy to see. Because in many ways, things seem to happen randomly. Why is it that we're just living our lives and then all of a sudden there's an accident or we win the lottery and then our life changes, either for worse or for better? Why is that? It's difficult to understand. And therefore we have to study and be taught how everything works in this world according to our activities. We get results. That's why in Gita says that dukeshvanud vignamana sukeshu vigata spriyaha vitaraga bayakrota stitadir munirachite, that a person of steady intelligence, he's not disturbed when there's some cause for distress, and he's not elated when there's some cause for happiness. Why? Because he knows it's anyway, these things come and go. I must have done something in a previous life to get this cause of distress. I must have done something in a previous life to get this cause of happiness. Cause of happiness means getting a position, getting money, being liked, being praised, but it's all the interactions of the modes of nature. It's nothing to do with me, actually. This is all some illusion. Either our life is like a horror story, or it's like some kind of daydream in which everything goes right, and mostly it's something in between for most of us. Actually, if we understood what it was, we'd see it's more like a horror story. But anyway, it's just not meaningful. It's all temporary. Everything is changing all the time. We're like characters in someone else's daydream. The modes of nature, they push us up, they push us down. We do some pious activity and then we get some good result, and we do some sinful activity, we get some bad result. Go deeper beyond all this and see Krishna's hand in everything, and that we don't belong here. As long as we identify with all of this, then we keep on riding on the roller coaster of reactions to good and bad activities. So find Krishna, the controller. What does he want to do? How to get in line with his plan? Then we can start to be extricated from this and come to our actual position. Krishna, he tells us that in Bhagavad Gita, Sarvadhaman Parityaja Mame Kam Sharanam Raja Hangtva Sarva Papyebhyo Moksha Yashami Masucha. If you surrender to me, Krishna says, take shelter in me, I will deliver you from all sinful reactions. And implicit in this is that he'll deliver us from all pious reactions also. Pious, that's also one kind of impiety. All piety in this world, which is conceived of without a relation to Krishna, it's all maya. Ritertam yat pratiyeta na pratiyeta chatmani tadvidyad atmano mayam yatabhasho yatatamaha. Everything is all ignorance, it's all illusion. Everything, anything conceived of without a relation to Krishna, it's all illusion. So even the so-called pious activities, it's all binding us in this material world. So, submit to Krishna. This is what Rukmini is doing. And that's her position. Savadhaman parityatya mame kam sharan. She's that whatever my parents and my family members have decided for me, she's rejected all of that. And just surrendering to Krishna only. That's all. Complete surrender. If you don't take me, then anyway, I'm not going to go with this Shishupal. I'm willing to wait for thousands of lives to get your mercy, but I'm only going to go with you. This is her complete surrender to Krishna. And Krishna reciprocated. She said, come and get me, come and save me. And Krishna admitted, yes, all right, I must do. Krishna, who's the supreme controller, he reciprocated with his devotee. Whatever plans Krishna had, what he was going to do, he just dropped it immediately. Just whatever else he had on his agenda, jump on a horse and gallop all the way. It's a long way. Even the fastest train doesn't move at that speed today. From Dwaraka to Vidarbha, Kundina. That's, how far would that be? As the crow flies? I don't know, maybe 800 kilometers or something like that. So Krishna immediately reciprocated. He's already agreeing. The supreme controller, in reciprocation with Rukmini, who recognizes he's the supreme controller, is agreeing to be controlled by her immediately. Yes, she's calling. Yeah, all right, I'll go and capture her. And in this way, we see how Krishna, who's the supreme controller, he becomes controlled by the love of his devotees. So we shouldn't think that this Rukmini Leela is something very small or insignificant. That's a very foolish way to think. Certainly those who are cultivating love for Radha, Krishna and Vrindavan, they may not hear about these things so much, but for us, we should appreciate how great is the love of Rukmini, that Krishna, he is immediately ready to drop everything and run to her. She couldn't run to him, so he ran to her. She called him, "You come." She was asking him to, "You come and get me. Now you come and get me. I'm completely surrendered to you. I'm not, if you don't come and get me, then I'll just have to wait. That's all. But I'm not going to go with anyone else." And then Krishna, he immediately came. Yeah, it's either now or he has to wait thousands of lifetimes. So we can think the same way. We have to go to Krishna either now or after thousands of lifetimes. We might as well go now. Why wait? Ultimately, we have to surrender to Krishna. There may be so many Shishupals and Jarasandhas who we might think it'd be nice to associate with them, prestigious people of this world. But Rukmini, she wasn't interested. Even from the social point of view at that time, Shishupal and Jarasandha were much better situated than Krishna. Krishna, as Shishupal later pointed out, was a dodgy kind of character. He was, he started off as a cowherd boy, and then all of a sudden he just emerged in his youth. And we heard first of all that he was the son of a Vaishya, and then all of a sudden he claimed to be the son of Vasudev. And Vasudev himself, he's not much of a Kshatriya. He didn't conquer anything, he was just locked up most of his life. And Krishna, he killed his maternal uncle. And now he's claiming to be the king of this Dwarka. So Shishupal's position was much more, his lineage was clear. His position as the king of Chedi is quite clear. So Rukmini, if she had just seen the material situation, then she should have chosen Shishupal. She had no interest at all in Shishupal. And Shishupal was, anyway, he hated Krishna. But his hatred for Krishna, can you imagine how much his hatred for Krishna increased after this? How humiliating that he's a big Kshatriya king and he's getting married to this beautiful girl and all the other kings are coming. It's a big festival and Krishna just comes right in the middle and goes like this and takes out Rukmini and he's just smiling at the kings and waving like this. And they're all, what's going on? And Krishna nonchalantly takes out Rukmini and shoots a few people up. And Rukmini comes after, and Krishna ties him up and gives him a punk haircut like this and lets him go. To tie up a Kshatriya and let him go, that's the worst humiliating thing. If you kill him, it's much better. But to tie him up and let him go means you don't care. Let him go, let him get his armies, let him come back again. I don't care. I'm not bothered by him. So extremely humiliating. That's Krishna. Well, Rukmini, she made the right choice, that's for sure. It's not imaginable. Shishupal, Rukmini. It's just not imaginable. So we're very grateful to Krishna, the Supreme Controller, Srila Prabhupada, as you all very well know, gave the unusual name to Krishna here. Krishna has many names. Devotees, they may, as it were, make up names because there are unlimited qualities of Krishna, so devotees, they may make up something, just like here, Yadu Deva. Of course, it's an eternal name of Krishna, but there are so many ways in which Krishna can be appreciated. It's not such a common name of Krishna. Yadotama, there are so many different names we can be said of Krishna in relationship to the Yadus. So Krishna gave the name Landanishwara. Who ever heard of such a name? Landanishwara, Pari Ishwara. He gave these names. So Krishna, he's the controller of London. At least from London, people used to think we're controlling the world. Maybe they're still thinking. Krishna, he's not the only controller of this little dot on the map called London. He's the controller of unlimited universes. But at least the people of London, they could come to understand that Krishna is the supreme controller here also. You're not exempt. So, that's all your service to Krishna, to at least let the people of London know who the real boss is here. It's not the Prime Minister, it's not the Queen. We don't have anything against them. We respect them for their position. But the Queen would do much better if she would do as all kings in India at least used to do. They'll come down and bow down to Krishna. Then they'll be proper monarch. Here we see the Bhishmaka. They had the family deity. Girija. So they had enough sense to... He's the king, but he will go and bow down before the deity. Recognize that by the grace of Krishna, I've got such a position. By his grace. So we should bow down to him. Like Bharat, he was ruling the kingdom with the shoes of Ramachandra. Understand, he is the boss. I'm ruling, but on his behalf. As at Tiruvananthapuram in South India, some generations ago, he put all the kingdom in the name of the deity, and he made himself the caretaker of that. So that's the proper attitude of king. What to speak of so many tiny people, even such a great personality, if they can recognize Krishna as the supreme controller, so that you can make your ambition, that you can preach Krishna consciousness so nicely that the queen will come and bow down before Radha Landanishwar, as you should do. Actually, they should make Buckingham Palace. We need a good temple in London. Should make there. They made a big palace for the emperor of the Aldi, but they should have Krishna. No. So, there's no harm in being ambitious in Krishna's service. Anything's possible. He's the supreme controller. Just a thought. So, Hare Krishna. Any questions, comments? Srila Prabhupada.
It's also the last day of the World Holy Name Week.
World Holy Name Week.
Well, it's 10 days. Today is the last day.
Of the 10th day.
Yeah. And to set on the principle of the event of Prabhupada's arrival in Boston on this day. This evening, if anyone is free to go on Harinam today, please do so. And this evening at 6 o'clock, if the projector works properly, we'll be having a presentation on Srila Prabhupada's arrival in Boston.
Oh.
That's not real. I mean, we'll make it up today. But I mean, the whole bit.
Great event. Hare Krishna. What's Metro? It's a free magazine, is it? They showed a photo of a dog next to them?
Yeah. And there was a specific dog in Kiev that looked just like the president of Russia.
Putin.
Yeah, I know.
Everyone knows. Yeah. I many years ago, we had been doing traveling book distribution, and we drove in one evening about 8 o'clock to Leicester in the van, and I just saw someone on one of these, what do you call that? They're like a booth where you sell hot dogs and this kind of thing. What's that called? You know, this trolley stall or something. They were selling chicken, some old guy selling chicken. His face looked just like a chicken. It's an old man, and it looked quite obvious what his next birth is going to be. Already preparing. That KFC, that it looked, his face, doesn't it? Looks just like a chicken. It's a very common thing. You see people with their horse, and they look just like their horse. It's already happening. The gross body starts to change.
No, but that was their last life.
Hmm?
That was their last life.
Well, it looks like they're heading for that in their next life. Their present life. Yes. Yeah, yeah.
So, and then this goes on, the Krishna is Govinda, the Supreme Joy. Where does this propensity come from with these atheists? And what do you say to these atheists? And
the propensity to deny Krishna, where does it come from?
Not the propensity to deny, the propensity to assume that they're having fun and they're enjoying. You know, the atheists, they think that they really are enjoying it, you know, and they're having a wonderful time.
What do I say to them in relation to?
In relation to the fact that they are not the supreme enjoyer, but they think they're enjoying.
That they're not, that you're not the supreme enjoyer, but they think that they're enjoying. I don't usually got that far with, if I'm going to speak to people who are hardcore atheists. It's really, you're doing A, B, C, and you don't get on to D even. So the first thing is to... well, actually, it's not that I've made millions of such presentations, but the first thing is to point out that what they call science is maybe not as scientific as they think. They're also biased. They also make so many mistakes. It's also what they call science. It's also based on faith. But that's another whole big topic. I mean, you can download from my website if you like. There are so many lectures there. Yeah. But then you have to get into another whole lecture if you're going to start on that. So, Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Sri Sri Gaura Nithai, Sri Giri Govardhan, Sri Radha Landanisha, Jagannath Subhadra Baladev, and unseen Sudarshan Chakra.